Now back to The Gardening Show with Dean Krauskopf.
Welcome to another edition of The Gardening Show, and you can join our conversation, 1-800-859-0957. Or, of course, thegardeningshow.com. At the bottom of the page, you can email me, and Jim in Farmington Hills and Mike in Lake Orion. Hope you're both listening because you both asked questions about your maple. We'll be getting to that. But above, on the top of the page, there's a summary of things that we put up, questions from the last week or things that I think are interesting. So if you want to look at the top of that webpage, thegardeningshow.com, we have some information on Japanese knotwood, which which is usually called wild bamboo, although it's not. Information on lawn fertilization in case you're looking better. And just as a aside, Kevin Frank, MSU's turf team, has a great article out this week on lawn renovation for this week's show and for the website. I'll be putting that up on thegardeningshow.com. Mary Hausbeck is talking about impatient downy mildew. And if you're not familiar with this disease and you have impatience, take a look at that, because this one can get into the soil. And if it does, it attacks year after year. So take a look. And if your plants are infested, just get them out of there. Do not compost them or anything like that. Put them in a trash and get them out of your property. Rhubarb was a question, and elderberries. So that was on the last week's show. And if you missed last week, or you just want to go back and figure out, what did he say? Check the top of the website, because we have podcasts. Rich and our guys here in the engineering section always put up the podcasts. So you can go back, and if you missed one or just want to argue with me, I guess that's okay. Here's the phone number if you want to. 1-800-859-0957. Or thegardeningshow.com. Let's go to Sally and Howell. And then Joe and Windsor, you're up next. So, Sally, welcome to The Gardening Show. You're going to argue with me, or what's going on?
No. I tried to get through to you last week. The gentleman called in about his gardenias.
Oh, right.
Do you remember that? He had two, one that didn't bloom.
One that didn't bloom and one that did, yeah.
Correct. Right. Well, I have one that's 7 years old, and I take it in the winter. But what I do is I put Bloom Buster on it every week.
Okay.
Once a week.
They are heavy feeders.
Oh,
that's true.
And it blooms profusely.
The other thing, though, Sally, as we were talking about last week, one of the key points is the humidity. If you can control humidity, then you've got a much better chance, because if it dries out a little bit, they will automatically drop their buds. So
yeah,
you're doing a great job. If you can do it 7 years in a row, you great credit. I can't do it.
I keep it in the east-south corner of my deck.
Where it isn't heated, right?
Excuse me?
It's not heated out there.
Well, it's, yeah, because it's...
Well, I mean, it's not like in the middle of the house or someplace like that.
Oh, no. Yeah. I mean out on the deck, but inside I have it on, it's a south window and French doors.
Right. That's ideal. Cool, high humidity. As much sun as you can give it.
And lots of Bloom Buster.
Okay.
I hope that man is listening.
I hope so, too. Thank you so much.
Nice talking to
Good talking to you, Sally.
Bye-bye.
1-800-859-0957. Let's go to Joe in Windsor. Joe, welcome to The Gardening Show.
Yeah, how you doing, Dean?
Doing great. What's going on?
I want to ask you, a lot of people are using begonias in full sun. Do you have much chance of being successful with that?
Very much so. Now, it depends on which begonia. If you're talking about the small leaf one, the thick leaf one, the fibrous types, they do quite well in the sun with one trick. And the trick is that you've got to mulch the soil. The problem with those begonias in full sun is if the media temperature or the root temperature gets too high, then it really stresses them out. If you can keep those roots cool, they do fine. We've had beds at MSU right out there in front of the administration building, and if you're familiar with campus at all, that is as hot as I've ever seen in Michigan, and they do wonderfully year after year.
Okay,
so it works well.
What if we're talking about pots?
The problem with pots, Joe, is unless they're how big? If they're big and the media doesn't get hot inside, they probably would work. If you're talking a small six-inch pot or something like that, wouldn't work. I think it'd get too hot, and they dry out too fast. I think if you went to a bigger pot with more plants in it, I think it'd work better.
Okay, Dean, how big of a pot would you have to have for one of those plants to achieve?
I'm guessing at least a 12 to a 14.
You have to have that big of a pot, eh?
It's the amount of mass, Joe, a medium mass, to keep it the media temperature as cool as possible, as uniform as possible to, from day to night.
Okay.
Big pot.
Now, okay, but in the shade now, then you'd have no problem with all these things, right?
No, a couple hours sun would be just fine. Further than that, I think, then you might have to worry about it a little bit. No, okay. Try it. Those are really, really tough plants.
And they're begonias.
Yeah, they are, and they really do well. And there's some newer ones coming out, with different colors and leaf shade colors and things like that. So I'd try it. Why not? It'd be fun. Okay?
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. 1-800-859-0957. Also, thegardeningshow.com. Jim in Farmington Hills and Mike in Lake Orion, you emailed me. Both of you have maples that are dropping leaves and have spots on them. Jim's, you said yours are black. Mike's, yours look like frog eyes. And so I think the maples essentially have two different diseases going right now. One, Jim, is what's called black spot or tar spot. And you described it very well, black spot on leaves and the leaves fall off. Mike, yours is a little bit probably a disease called phytocastica. The bottom line on both of you is that this time of year, leaf drop and this kind of disease on the leaves causes no harm. There's absolutely no problem with them, and it's nothing you need to spray or worry about. And Mike, you ask about mulching them in, go right ahead. It isn't going to harm the tree, and it won't cause any disease problems next year. So basically, it's fall, and we need to relax, unless you want to call me. 1-800-859-0957, or check out thegardeningshow.com. Stay tuned. I'll be right back.
You're listening to The Gardening Show with Dean Krauskopf.
And welcome back to the conversation. And I keep reminding everyone, if you can't get through the lines, and we're backed up right now, check out thegardeningshow.com, my website, and we put lots of information up there. And, of course, the podcasts are up there, too. So let's see if we can clear out a few lines. Let's go to Jonathan in Detroit and Pat in Novi. You're going to be up next. So, Jonathan, welcome to The Gardening Show.
Yes, I've got a question. I bought some arborvitae, and they dried out a little bit.
Okay.
Now they turned brown a little bit, and then I watered them, and they really turned brown. Are they totally dead?
Probably not, Jonathan, and I'm guessing, you know, only time will tell on this. But arborvitae are...
I don't see any green, though.
Okay, yeah. How long... When did you buy these, and how long have they you had them?
A year or so. Ooh.
Now, they're planted?
Yeah, in the ground.
Oh, okay. Here's what I need you to do, Jonathan. Go out there and snap off some branches. Just twist them. And if they pop right off, it's dead.
Okay.
Yeah. Now,
so if they've got a little give to them, then it might have life in it.
Yeah, but don't get your hopes up. If they're that old and they're going like that, they're not good. Now, here's a couple things you need to think about, especially you're in Detroit. Can I ask what part of Detroit, by the way?
It's actually Hazel Park, just north of.
Sure. Okay, you're on the clay. One of the things about arbs is that if the water stands around the roots, they'll die faster than any other way. And it's really... That's the way they are. On the clay soils that you've got there, it may be that if you want to do arbs, and you're going to need to mound them up. In other words, that you only dig a hole, so it's about the root ball is only about 2/3 in the ground, and the rest is in a mulch above it or a pile of soil up, and make sure that the water just doesn't stand in that hole because that can kill them within days. So it's very common on the clays that you're dealing there in Hazel Park. All right.
Okay.
Good luck with that, sir. Speaking of arbs, let's go to line 5, and that is Pat in Novi. Pat, welcome to the Gardening Show, and you have an arb question, too.
Yes, I do. I have steeplechase type of arbs that were planted in June.
Okay.
New construction, and right. I had like 25 of them, and 5 of them, they've all been planted. I was listening to what you were saying. They've all been planted 2/3 of, in the ground, 1/3 above with wood chips over it, and they're starting to turn brown. 5 of the 25 have turned brown.
Okay. Now, did you put these in, or did you have a company come in and do it?
A landscaper did it.
Okay. First thing I would do, Pat, is there a pattern to the five that are brown, like one end or the other?
It looks like they were in an area where the sprinkler was not giving them as much water as the other ones were, which I fixed now.
That could do it. Now, the one thing, first of all, what you just said put warning bells in the back of my mind. Don't try to water shrubs with a sprinkler head. Doesn't work. You really need to think about an ooze tube, soaker hoses, or some other kind of watering system in there, because you're getting into the same problem where you've got uneven distribution, because as the plants grow, they block one to the other, all kinds of issues with that. The other thing is that when you're using a sprinkler, leaves stay wet, and that sets the plants up for leaf spot diseases and things like that. So really think about getting your guy out there to redo that irrigation system, because down the line you're going to have problems. The other first thing I would do, Pat, and it sounds kind of dumb, but this is the way I would do it. The ones that are brown, go up and just yank them. See if you can pull them right up out of the ground. Because if you can, what happened was that when they put the plants in, they just dropped them into the hole. And that isn't the way you plant an herb or any shrub. The new research is very, very clear. Instead of making this great hole, putting all the media in it and doing all this great stuff, you're actually making it worse. Because what happens is that the roots may never penetrate out into the soil, and then that media right around the roots dries out first, and they can't get any more water. So if you can pop that plant right up out of the ground and there's no evidence that the roots moved out, that's probably the issue, and they got to be replaced. The trick is that when you get the plants, Pat, you take the media off of them. You wash it off. You put them right back into the soil where they're going to go. It sounds like the height and everything is just right. That should be no problem, and that should help a lot. But I really would suggest changing that irrigation system.
Okay. Excellent. Okay.
Check with your
thank you very much.
Check with your landscaper. See if they may have some hints too. Okay.
Thank you.
1-800-859-0957, or of course always thegardeningshow.com. Let's go to Susan in Brighton, and Dennis in Shelby Township. Stay on the line. Susan,
welcome
to the Gardening Show.
Yes, thank you. I have two little pots of herbs on my deck that I put in potting soil, and they're doing just great. One is thyme and one is basil.
Sure.
And the pot, I think, is about 10 or 11 inches high and about 12 inches round. It's not real big. But I'm wondering, how can I save those over the winter? Will they last if I just leave them on the deck?
Nope.
No.
They'll freeze out.
Okay.
Just bring them inside.
Bring them inside.
Now, that's easy for me to say and hard for you to do.
Right.
I'm serious. Because they need high light, as much as light as you can give them, relatively cool temperatures. They like about the 50s and 60s, and that's not easy to find in most homes. The other thing is that they have to have an area where there's no, you can't put them next to an air vent or something where they get a draft.
Okay.
So if you've got a spot like that, they do just fine.
Well, I do have a Florida room that's unheated that faces the south, and it's all windows.
That might work. You may have to bring them in on some really cold nights.
Okay.
But that might work.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd try it. Why not?
All right, like January and February, I know it gets pretty cold, but I mean, as long as there's sun out there, it's really warm. I can open the door up.
You know, it's amazing to me. I work in greenhouses a lot, and it'll be in the middle of January, and 10 below outside, and there's no heat on in the greenhouse because the sun is that powerful even in January.
Right.
It's amazing.
It is.
And I would put, you know what I would do? I would get one of these, I don't know, what do you call them? I call them a caster thing. Where you've got the four wheels underneath and you can put the pot on top so you can just roll it around.
Okay.
And because that way, like in the middle of January, if you get a sunny day, they go out into the Florida room and at night they come back.
Okay.
Well, that's
worth trying then.
Yeah, sure. Now, the one thing though, Susan, I would suggest, even though you're not seeing any insects at this point, before you bring them in, go to your local family-owned garden center and ask for some insecticidal soap. All right?
Okay.
And you got one in Brighton. Got two, actually, in Brighton.
Right.
And I want you, before you bring these in, spray them down very, very well with the insecticidal soap according to directions. And that will make sure we are not bringing any friends in.
Okay.
Because they will like it inside, too, unfortunately.
Okay.
The other thing is that, and my wife does this when she grows all her herbs in pots. And what she'll do, instead of bringing them in, she takes cuttings and roots the cuttings, and she's got a brand new plant in a fresh pot, and then she overwinters that. So oh. you could do that too, and that's kind of fun to play with.
Yeah, and it does. It's not as big.
That's true, and you have less problems with any insects and other issues. So lots of different options.
Do I have to put it in water, or can I just put
it
in potting soil?
Get some really good potting soil when you go over to get your insecticidal soap.
Yeah.
And not the potting mix. I want the potting mix, the commercial stuff. Mm-hmm. And they'll know what they're talking about.
Okay.
And use that to root it in, and then it just goes right on through. Okay?
Well, thank you so much for all the tips.
Thank you for calling.
Okay, bye-bye.
Enjoy your herbs. 1-800-859-0957. Let's go to Dennis in Shelby Township. And Catherine, you've been very patient, and you're up next. So, Dennis, welcome to the Gardening Show.
Dean, great program.
Thank you.
Dean, I got a problem with my grass in my backyard. Sandy right. soil.
Right.
Watering both our front and back, both see sun pretty much the full day. But the lawn in the backyard along a tree line about 8 to 10 foot wide, running about 20 foot along a tree line of evergreens mm-hmm. off the patio, which is all sunny, and a chunk of my backyard is all dried out.
Yep.
And I did put down a grub killer early spring, which should have lasted, but when we had the heat in the middle of the summer, it just dried up, and I've got patchy green and
okay.
a lot of brown in between.
Dennis, can you stay on the line with me?
Sure.
Rich is trying to tell me that I've got to go. We've got to do some other things for a few minutes, but we'll be back with Dennis. And Catherine, stay on the line. Chris in Livonia, Matt and Clio, you're up on my radar, too. If you'd like to join the conversation, here's the number, 1-800-859-0957. Stay tuned.
Now back to the Gardening Show with Dean Krauskopf.
And you, if you'd like to call in, 1-800-859-0957. I guess, you know, I'm so used to saying that you don't have to dial one anymore. It's 800-859-0957. I'm showing my age. Anyhow, let's go back to Dennis in Shelby Township. So, and Dennis, describe to me your yard again. I know you said that there's patches of grass that won't grow, but I have a short memory. Bring me back up to speed.
Okay, my grass between the front and rear yard, the front grass is great,
okay.
nice and thick. Backyard I've got a major strip along an evergreen border fence of balsams and spruce that seems to be a real problematic in terms of holding grass.
Mm-hmm.
That area is patchy green with a lot of dry spots in between, and it's about 20 foot by 10 foot wide. And it sees sun all day long, and a good chunk of the backyard, about a third of my backyard grass, has a lot of dry patches in it.
Yeah.
Did put a grub killer down in early spring, which I thought would have lasted. But both front and back get watered about the same. When we had the real hot spell, which is where this thing really started, I was watering every day.
Okay.
And I have been mulching the grass, but that doesn't seem to help as much as in the front. The grass in the front just keeps constantly growing and sees the same condition.
Okay. Well, the part of the problem is that, Dennis, we think the front and the back of your house is equal. It's not. And just because of the way the house and everything goes. So a couple of things. What's it look like on the other side of the shrubs or the trees?
On my neighbor's side is probably it's grassy, and they get a lot of shade.
Okay. One of the things that's coming to mind immediately is that trees and shrubs are much better at getting water than grass is. So it may be that the grass is just losing the battle, and that's very common. Are you hand watering this, or have you got an in-ground system?
In-ground system.
Have you had it checked lately?
For what?
Has it been balanced and make sure that the heads are doing what they're supposed to be doing and
yes.
things like this?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm very sensitive to that.
Well, it's amazing how fast a sprinkler head can go bad sometimes.
Yeah,
you just don't know it.
Yeah.
All right.
I do watch the system, and the heads are doing their job, and
all right. Here's a couple of things that you may want to check. First of all, your comments on the grubs are very possible because the materials that we use for grub control don't work in the spring. They have to be applied in July.
Okay.
So they don't carry over. It depends on which one you look at. And if you go back on thegardeningshow.com, that website, you're just going to have to scroll through. That was a topic 3, 4, 5 shows ago, and there's a great article in there about which ones work and which ones don't. So that may be part of the problem. And we are seeing, Dave Smitley's got a great article coming out this week, and I'll put that one in too, about grubs that are showing up 3, 4 weeks early because of the heat. And they may be doing damage out there, but if they're that big, Dennis, you can go find them. And that's really what I want you to do. Have you been out and doing any digging right at the – you find them right at the edges of the spots, on the right on the edge of the green and the brown. Have you done any digging?
I have not. I've been tempted to do some of that today, but it's a little too warm.
If you can see that, if you can find grubs, there it should be half inch or more by now to do that much damage.
White color?
Yeah. White C-shaped when you pop them up out of the ground. They curl up and go into a C-shape. There's two materials out there that you can use now. One is called 7, which is carbaryl, and the other one is Dilox, which is trichlorferan.
7, is that the brand name?
No, it's the common name. And if you give me a few days, middle of the week, I'll put that up on the website so I can put Dave Smitley's article up, and he lists the materials for you so you don't have to worry about my spelling. And if you find grubs, those will knock them down. You may have to go in twice. And that very possible is what's causing it. The other thing I'm thinking about is that a couple other possibilities. One of which is sometimes along shrubs and stuff like that, you'll get what's called a dry zone, or the soil actually repels water. And the way you can tell that is to just go out, take a 5-gallon bucket and pour it on the ground and see if it runs off.
Yeah.
And if it does, then you got to figure out what's going on. And a lot of times it's a residue from the shrubs. And the way you can break that up with just a little soapy water to do that, but it'll come back. So you might want to think about doing a little redesign on your yard and using a mulch on that area right into the shrubs and maybe moving it out a little bit.
Even though it's like a 10-foot...
Think about it. Be creative with it. It doesn't have to be a straight line. You know, a lot of beds are 10 foot more wide, and you can put a lot of things in there that might cause less of a problem. But, you know, that's just a thought. So check the watering issue, if it's going into the soil or not. If it isn't, just a little bit of hand dishwashing soap in 5 gallons of water, and just enough that when you put your hand in it, you get a little foam. And just pour that in, and that sort of will break that surface tension up, and the water will start to penetrate. But it may come back. So you'll have to keep an eye on that.
Okay.
Grubs are a possibility. You can find out for yourself and check that out. The third possibility is compacted soil, lots of other things over on that side that could be causing this. And the only way
I was going to have it aerated here.
Good idea.
September.
I would go in September, and you need a core aerator, and you need to go down 3 inches. So that's usually a commercial app. You probably may not be able to find one to rent if you were thinking about doing it.
Well, I was going to have someone come in and do it.
Yeah, make sure they use a core aerator, not the other type.
Yeah.
Always a good idea. Might help. Lots of things. I think I would just get out there with a trowel or something and do some digging, and you may find a lot of interesting things as you dig into that. And you may see, one thing I would see is how deep is that root system going down. If it's sitting right up on top, that gives you some indication that the core aeration may be your real key to this whole thing. Of course, if you're digging, you find grubs, that answers that question too. So a little work with a shovel will really give you a lot more information, Dennis.
Yep, okay.
Okay.
Reseeding. I was going to just try to go with a mixture of about a third Kentucky, creeping fescue, and rye.
I wouldn't go that high in the rye just because of the, you know, you don't need that much. All you want to do is get it green fast and protect the bluegrass to come up. It's not bad. There are other mixes out there. There are other combinations that will work just as well. So that's not bad. Again, on my website, I apologize. I can't remember how many shows ago. There's a listing of the recommended varieties for Michigan. So you might want to watch, get some names. How old is the grass in your yard, do you know?
35 years, but I've, in that one area, I've seeded several times.
Well,
and I've had plus or minus success.
See, there's the issue. If you've done it, you've seeded over and over again, there's an environmental issue there that's big time. And that's arguing to me, why fight it? Why not just use a mulch or something in there or get creative and try to, something means in that area, grass is just not getting the environment it needs to grow and establish. So there's other issues going on there. Okay?
Okay.
Good luck. Call me, give me a call back next week and tell me what you found when you did some digging, okay?
I appreciate it. Thank you.
My pleasure. 1-800-859-0957. Let's go to Catherine in Cherry, Ohio. Catherine, welcome to The Gardening Show.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call, and I listen to you all the time. You're great.
Catherine, I appreciate that. My wife probably would not agree. But where is Cherry, Ohio, if I may be rude to ask? I don't know. Where is that?
Well, it's halfway between Toledo and Columbus.
Oh, sure. Okay.
Okay.
That's a pretty area down in there.
Very nice.
Yes, it is. How can I help you, Catherine?
We have planted cabbage plants, mm-hmm. and they did not come to a head. All I have is leaves,
yep.
lots of leaves. I never had that happen before.
When did you plant them?
This spring.
Before the warm spell?
Yes.
Yeah. What happened is that they got, they had the cold for a while, a little bit. Then they got warm, and they really started to grow, and then we had cold again. A little bit. And basically what happened is they tried to go to seed, or they tried to bolt. And if you dig down in there, you may find, have you opened any of those up just to look
but
and see?
But there's nothing in there.
Right. It may be that what happened, they tried to set seed, and that didn't happen, and they just grew leaves. It's that warm, cold thing. I almost guess.
Okay.
Now, that doesn't mean, though, up here we're planting cabbage right now. So if you can find somebody that's got some cabbage plants, the fall cabbage to me is absolutely the best in the year. Anyhow, it's much tastier.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you for being so kind.
Bye.
Bye. 1-800-859-0957. Of course, thegardeningshow.com. You can email me at the bottom of the gardening show, and I will try to get to those answers as quick as I can. Okay, background music means I've got a few minutes, but I was trying to find somebody. And I apologize. Bill in West Bloomfield, I hope you're listening. You planted green velvet boxwood and wondered why they were only growing an inch a year. Well, they're only supposed to. It's a dwarf variety. So if you want a taller plant, speed up the growth, you're going to have to take the green velvet out and replace them. Sorry about that. You know, there's another advantage of going to a family-owned nursery and garden center. They ask better questions and know what they're talking about. Stay tuned.
Now back to The Gardening Show with Dean Krauskopf.
Welcome back. And a couple lines are open, 1-800-859-0957. You know, one of the things that I was just mentioned on the email at thegardeningshow.com from Bill from West Bloomfield about the boxwood, he got the wrong kind, you know. And one of the things that I like about my local, family-owned, multi-generational garden center is sometimes not so much the answers they give me, but they ask the right questions. And somebody, Bill, should have asked you, how fast do you want these to grow? And apparently that didn't happen. So sorry about that. But again, love my local people. Let's go to Matt in Clio. And Chris in Livonia, you're up next. Matt, welcome to The Gardening Show.
Oh, thank you. Hi, Dean. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for being so patient with me today.
That's all right. That's all right. Love the show. Hey, we've been planting in the same spot for our vegetable garden probably at least the last 12 years, and who knows how many years before that the people before us did.
Sure.
Out in the yard. It's about 25 by 25, and we plant, you know, peppers and tomatoes, probably about 5 different varieties of tomatoes.
Okay.
Zucchini, squash, and the only thing that gives me problems every year is the tomatoes.
Okay.
And it starts out, we plant seedlings, or I plant seedlings, and, you know, they're 3-4 inches tall, and this year I got them in the week before Memorial Day.
Right.
But within a month, the spots start appearing on the lower leaves, and you know, a little bit worse and worse. And this year, I sprayed a 7 fungicide. I think it was a 7, as a red container, on them a couple different times. But then it got too hot, And I don't think you're supposed to be spraying on it when it gets above 85, so I stopped.
Oh, you're right
and
on
now,
that.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, you're right. I agree with you on the temperature.
And now, we've gotten a couple batches of, we were able to can, but now the leaves are almost completely gone off all 25 tomato plants. And there's, like I say, everything from Romas to cherry to beefsteak
sure.
to...
Sure.
And I tried getting disease-resistant, I read on the little tag, that comes with them from our local greenhouse, and it never fails. It's every year.
Well,
I'm wondering if I should give it up for a year or two with the tomatoes, if that's what it is. And I try rotating them around and everything in the garden every year. I put them in a different spot, and it just doesn't seem to matter.
I applaud what you're doing, but I don't think it was necessary. Matt, do you have internet access?
Yes, I do.
Check when you get a chance, thegardeningshow.com. And check early in the season. There was a whole, we've had for the last 4 to 5 years, outbreaks of early blight on tomatoes. And it's really gotten bad. And the description that you're giving me is a classic. It's the disease. It's airborne. It can overwinter. Now, there is a point there. And one of the things that you need to think about is making sure that you don't leave any material, any debris from the tomato plants in your garden, and don't put them in a compost pile. Burn them, put them in a trash, into the landfill, get them off, or bury them. And they need to be buried about a foot deep. It's normal. You know, it's not normal, but it's you and everybody else. I've had it, and everybody's had it. What happened about 4 or 5 years ago is, as far as Mary Hausbeck, my plant pathologist, tells me, is that there was a mutation. The disease got a lot more virulent, a lot more aggressive, and we're just trying to catch up with it. So the other thing that can happen, now you have a local greenhouse up there that you deal with, right? That's what I
right.
heard. Okay. Are you good with them? You know them well?
Yeah, pretty much. Pretty
okay.
much.
Go talk to them and make sure that they're not carrying over any debris either. Now, I don't think that's happening, and most greenhouses know this. It's just a matter of that. But, you know, a nice friendly conversation never hurts.
Right.
The other thing is you might want to talk to them about there are a few varieties that are more resistant to this thing than others. Now, there's not a whole lot of resistance out there, but there are some. So you might want to talk about, see which varieties they're going to order next year. And, by the way, I would suspect that order's already in, so or getting close to being. I know the salespeople are out right now. So you might, if you're down there... go buy some garden mums from them and talk about tomatoes the next spring. Now, the spray program that you've got is, you're on the right track, but you didn't follow through. You can get, and it's chlorothalonil, and it's a material that everybody uses on any of the commercial vegetable sprays, fungicides. Now, 7 is an insecticide just for whatever. So, but most of them are combinations. You have to spray that at least every whatever the label says, I think it's every 2 weeks, but after every rain, for sure. And the other trick is that you're right that you shouldn't spray when the temperature's above 80, about 75 to 80, which means that I'm getting up and spraying just before dawn if I have to go in and spray. So resistant plants, clean area, plus the spray program, and you just, even before you see it, you just start from a little bit and go with it. Usually you can get, you'll see some disease, but you'll get a harvest. You'll see some. Okay?
Yeah, we were lucky to be able to can a couple times this year before, and now it's pretty bad.
Yeah.
You know, I was going to ask you, too. Can I just ask you one more thing?
Real quick.
It's been told to me that in this year we had to water a lot because of the lack of rain.
Oh, yeah.
But should you, when I'm watering, and I usually water when I get home during the day, on soaker and then just get it on the roots or get it towards the base and not try and get any on the leaves?
Get none on the leaves because this disease is spread by splashing water.
Okay.
Keep them as dry as you possibly can. That's impossible, but try to do it. And that's one of the reasons it starts on the bottom, by the way. That's where it's getting spread around from it splashing up. So make sure you clean out all that dead material, including the root systems. Just pull everything out and either burn it or bury it or whatever you have to do.
Yeah, I usually throw it in the field,
bury
which
it.
Is, you know, 10, 12 feet away. But
bury it. Dig a hole and bury it.
Wow.
Get it under the ground. And it doesn't have to, I always say a foot, but 6 inches. The trick is to get it deep enough that you'll never see it again. You know, sometimes if you bury it and you'd get just a light layer of soil over it pops up over the winter as it frost heaves. So make sure it goes down well below line. Is that area plowed where you're gonna where you put the debris?
No, it's just a field. Okay. Just an overgrown field.
Yeah, if it happened to be a field where it's plowed, you got to go below the plow depth so it isn't flipped up.
Well, I'll just make sure I get rid of it now. I'll put it in the garbage or something. So
yeah, and go down and have a chat with your local greenhouse people. You know, buy some buy some garden mums. It's that time of year.
I will.
Okay?
Thank you.
Thank
Appreciate
you, Matt.
Your help.
Let's go to Chris in Livonia. Chris, welcome to the gardening show.
Thank you. My hydrangeas are all done blooming.
Right.
Now, do I trim the flowers off now or wait until spring?
Which hydrangea do you have, Chris? The big snowball one?
Yeah.
Yeah. You can do a little pruning right now, but not the new shoots that are coming out.
Well,
because that's where the flower buds are. The flower buds are already there. But for next year, and if you prune those new shoots coming out, that's where you'll just cut them off. So you can take off the old flowers as they get brown and clip them. And take that.
Now, do I do that now?
I like to leave them because I got a hydrangea. It's up against a building, and in the snow, when it gets snow under it with against that and that brown up there, it really looks kind of cool. So I leave them till in the spring. But that's up to you. But just don't prune the new shoots.
Well, I think when you said the large balls, now I'm not sure. These are real full.
Right. It's the common one, the round, not the one that looks like a pyramid. And they've been blooming, right? Yeah, started about 4 weeks ago.
Yeah.
That's the one, the old-fashioned hydrangea.
So if I just don't do anything to them now and wait until spring and then no.
Just prune the dead plants off, parts off, not the shoots. Okay, Chris?
All right, thanks a lot.
Thank you. Background music means where did the hour go? Real quick, though, Greg in Dearborn Heights, you have a plant in your yard, you don't know what it is. Check out my thegardeningshow.com. I'll put it up to give me to about Wednesday. Jesse Saylor, who is a retired prof in the horticulture department, taught plant identification to 10 to 20,000 students. And if he can teach a college kid what a plant looks like, I'll show you on his site how you can ID it. Just punch in the information and it'll key right out. So hopefully that helps. Any other information that you have up there, check out thegardeningshow.com. I'll be back next week and we'll have more information on anything you want to talk about. This week we're going to talk about some lawn renovation, tar spot on maples, and anything else. Have a great week.